Hello there, everybody. So I wanted to dig into this article that I was sent the other day. I put it on Twitter. I'd got quite a lot of traffic, quite a lot of retweets and so on. And it's from a website called The Middle Eastern Eye, and it's focused on how the British government reacts to terrorist attacks in Britain. And what it gets into is that they've actually got a sort of pre-planned, coordinated narrative. When there's a terrorist attack, that narrative then is activated and brought in, and it's how they go about doing that. And so the article he says the British government has prepared for terrorist incidents by pre-planning social media campaigns that are designed to appear to be a spontaneous public response to attacks, Middle East Eye has learned. Hashtags are carefully tested before the attack happens. Instagram images selected and impromptu, in quotes, street protests are posters are printed. In operations that contingency planners term controlled spontaneity, and that's the key term here. Politicians' statements, vigils, and interfaith events are also negotiated and planned in readiness for any terrorist attack. The campaigns have been deployed during every terrorist incident in recent years, including the 2017 London Bridge attack and the Finsbury Park mosque attack. So the government is on hand to craft that narrative, and the reason they do so, which he gets into quite quickly, is to misdirect the public righteous anger. If you've got a load of, let's say in the case of the London Bridge attack, there was sort of people going out for a night on the town, and they were butchered on the streets of London. Now, what the government doesn't want to have happen is that people begin to become Islamophobes, as they would have it, or that there's some sort of riots on the streets. What the government are in the business of doing here is crafting a narrative. It's directing all of that energy and all of that anger into, as he says here, within hours of the attack, other campaigns are swiftly organized, with I Heart posters being designed and distributed according to the location of the attack, and plans drawn up for people to hand out flowers at the scene of the crime in apparently in unprompted gestures of love and support. The purpose of the operations, according to a number of people involved in their creation, is to shape public responses, encouraging individuals to focus on empathy for the victims and a sense of unity with strangers rather than reacting with violence or anger. And there's three examples here which he's handed over. These are the examples of how this has actually been implemented so far. And the first one is a bit of an obscure story now, and that is the story of Ken Bigley, a foreign aid worker who was beheaded by ISIS. And then there was the use of hashtags, social media, then posters and vigils after the London Bridge attacks in June 2017, which 8 people were murdered and almost 50 injured. Third example is the Twitter, Facebook, and mainstream media campaign that was employed later that month, shortly after a man drove his van into a group of people outside a mosque in North London, killing one person and injuring 10 others. So it isn't just about calming the white population, it's also about sort of managing the multicultural society. That's what this is how they're doing it. So if we take a look at the first example from that list, this is. So there was a white British man beheaded quite publicly by the Islamic State, and then the government, the Home Office, are in cahoots with these PR departments, which we're going to get to in a minute. They come up with this. So it's obviously it's a Muslim woman wearing a Union Jack hijab, I think it's called. Now the message that sends is of course one of unity. She is taking the side of Britain and not the Islam. There's no confusion here. The Muslims are on your side, and it's been published in The Sun, which of course is a tabloid widely read among sort of white working class people, the kind of people who are going to be most angry against images of a white British man being beheaded. So they've in that way they're dousing the flames, if you like. This is the propaganda that they've came up with to stop people being anti-Islam after a British man's been beheaded in the Middle East. And then we can move on. I mean, let's move on to the next one. This is the reaction to the London Bridge attacks. Now, this one was a big one. This was where it all came together perfectly. The one with the hijab was sort of a test run. I should have mentioned as well that it's all in the article, but I don't want to just sort of read through an article. It's better to sort of dig into it a little bit. All of this, the government back in 2011, the British government in London, like a black drug dealer was shot, and the black community rioted for like weeks on end and seemed to burn half of London down. And according to this article, that absolutely terrified the British government, and they decided that they needed to have contingency plans in place, not just to sort of catch criminals and keep people safe, but in order to mould the public narrative. They needed to manipulate how people were thinking about the event itself, and that's what this is. So when you see on social media, in this case, the reaction to the London Bridge attack, I turn to love, hashtag I turn to love, was trending on Twitter for days on end. That was not actually organic whatsoever. That came from a government PR department, a private one as well. Well, we're going to come to that, but it isn't that you've got these sort of Goldbergs rubbing their hands in a darkened room. This is a business. The government is basically outsourcing the business of controlling the British people's attitudes towards each other. It's all being managed. ISIS will lose posters. So after this happened, a bunch of men arrived in an, which is, again, it says in the article, a bunch of men arrived and they went in behind the police lines and within hours and put posters up. And so the next day, the public went past and there was all of these posters up about unity and solidarity. And they were all ready. There was all a professional job. No, it's called fly posting. Normally, you're not allowed to do that. But in this case, it was all there. It was all coordinated. The police allowed them to put these posters up there. And the next day, it looked like it was some sort of grassroots movement for peace. It was nothing of the sort. It was the Home Office's PR department. And on top of that, they also told the local Muslim community that they would have 100 imams descend down on where the Islamic community was in this part of London. So then it would look like there was this huge sort of that all of the Muslims were coming out and saying, no, we don't want any more of these terrorist attacks from within our community. This has nothing to do with us. This has nothing to do with Islam. And we've got like 100 imams here that have come down here out of the goodness of their hearts to tell you that, to give this message loud and clear. This was rubbish as well. This was again the PR department had told the local Muslims there, if you can call them that, yeah, we're gonna have 100 imams down here. So it was all planned beforehand. Hashtags, all of it was ruled out. These are just contingency plans that the government has sort of springing into action. The third one is the white terrorist attack on the Muslim community. So now it's the other way around, and how they deal with that, because they don't want Muslims out on the streets rioting either. So here it's hashtag Unite Against All Terror, hashtag Turn to Love. And it's been plastered overnight by this sort of the PR department from the government to direct people to how to think about each other in the multicultural society. It's absolutely amazing, really. One of the things they did in this particular case as well was that there was the so-called hero imam or something. One of the local imams went out and helped some of the injured people. In actual fact, he hardly did anything at all. But when they looked through the PR groups and the Home Office looked through the footage and heard, interviewed people, it was actually the Muslim men who are actually most active were quite young, but they liked the idea. They liked the narrative of a kind of old age imam going out and helping people on the street. So these younger men were just sidelined, and the older imam was brought into the foreground because that was better optics, as they say. So here's the question: who are the bright sparks behind all of this? Because you can actually, like I say, it isn't a conspiracy. This is just a PR group. This is just people who want do advertising. Here they are. Zinc Network is a communications agency that helps communities, brands, and governments drive positive social change. Now, you can see in the management sort of social justice gobbledygook there straight away. Help governments, brands, and governments drive positive social change. Well, who defines what positive social change is? I think we know it. It's globalist technocrats like Zinc Network, and it becomes quite terrifying. But again, I expected there to be a couple of Coens or maybe a few Goldsteins in there, but there's not. What we see instead is sort of hipster millennials. IT consultant hipster millennials. It's actually worse that they are like that, but I'll get into that in a minute. And they claim to be countering fake news and champion authentic voices. Fake news contaminates the communications environment, undermines democracies, weakens international alliances, and can increase polarization. We work with governments, academics, and tech companies to understand the information and the media ecosystem and create solutions that tackle false narratives, promote a balanced and independent media sector, and empower positive voices to counter myths, truths, and misconceptions. So these are the people who are in the business of manipulating public attitudes and how the kind of the attitude of that the public should have after a terrorist attack, and how the public should view that, how they should internalize it, and view it. They are actually crafting that narrative in the name of countering fake news. What they would regard as being fake news, because maybe somebody goes on social media and says, "Why? Oh, it's time for us to send the Muslim community back. This is not working out, and we need to go our separate ways. This is just horrible to live like this, and we don't want it anymore." That's one positive. That's one way, one narrative that they don't want to get out there. But they'd call that fake news, and they'd call that attack on democracy. And so, in order not to have an attack on democracy, they've launched an attack on democracy, and false narratives. They've replaced it with their own, if you even call the former a false narrative. But what makes them so boring is that they don't seem to be at all aware of what they are. To these people, this would be just a good, this would just be doing a good thing. They're just good people, even though when you take a look at who's backing them, I mean, Jesus Christ. The United Nations, the NGOs, the London School of Economics, the Rockefeller Foundation, MNC, SACHI, the European Union, and so on and on and on and on. And these are the people. And he also want to say, in this complex and dynamic world, we believe that social change doesn't start in boardrooms, government departments, or universities, but among the people closest to the problems. We use every tool in the box to empower people to become catalysts for change, but they don't do anything of the sort. They are there to maintain the status quo. They are there to make sure everything remains subdued to a certain narrative. It's absolutely staggering to see how and they dress everything up in this kind of bland vanilla jargon, but what they're actually doing is completely misleading the public. They're having like an insidious plan, so that I mean I don't it wasn't mentioned in the article, but another one to that you may consider would be the Don't Look Back in Anger narrative, which came out of the Manchester Arena bombing. Because look, at the end of the day, the people are dying because of their narrative. People are dying because of what they belong to in this kind of globalist superstructure is the reason little girls get blown up at pop concerts. So they've then these kind of people, this system, this mentality, this morality, on the one hand creates the problem, and is this kind of Hegelian thing where they've created the problem, but then they are also going to create the solution, or at least they belong to the system which has created the problem. Let's not get carried away on the JQ and stuff. They have at least benefited from the system, and they are in league with the system, and they are doing the system's bidding. They aren't actually opening anything up for change. That would be impossible. They are conserving the status quo, because the status quo is one which favours multiculturalism. And they can dress it up in all of this ridiculous jargon if they want, but that's still the facts at the end of the day. They can say they are managing positive narratives in a rapidly changing, diverse global community, but there's still going to be a load of people dead on the streets after the next terrorist attack. And it's their job to make sure that nobody starts to question the sort of the preconceptions of the major narrative. It raises a lot of questions about the nature of a liberal society and individual will. Because we are living in the most, quite possibly the most controlled society that has ever existed in history, because I suspect that even in somewhere like North Korea, people are just scared of speaking out. I mean, maybe I'm wrong there, maybe they are completely brainwashed, but the idea that people can be so easily manipulated as this, when you see hashtag not all Muslims or whatever it is trending on Twitter, and that you're expected to think that it's sort of a grassroots movement, or that this is just the way people think about it, and it isn't. It isn't at all. It's a PR department. It's a PR stunt. It's a public relations operation from the government. It's absolutely fascinating, to be honest. It's a PR company who's there to mop up and cover up the downsides of their own ideology. It's absolutely fascinating. One thing that we have to consider here as well is that when people say, when are the normies going to wake up? When are the masses going to get it? When will people finally wake up and say they've had enough? Surely, with this terrorist attack, it's going to be the next terrorist attack will be the one, and people will say enough's enough. Well, in actual fact, that's not the case, because the people are going to be deliberately misdirected, and with this herd mentality, they'll get swept along in it. They will have what did they call it now? It will be controlled spontaneity. That's what it is. That's the key phrase here. Controlled spontaneity. So that even the way you react to an outrage is comes out of a government PR department. How do you beat that? How do you wake up the normies when the reactions they are having to something like a terrorist attack have actually been thought out beforehand by a public relations company who's funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the European Union? I don't know, to be honest. I don't want to end the video on a downer, but there seems to be another layer here. which I certainly, of course, we all know the media, the television, the education system. We are aware of all of these layers of control and propaganda and bullshit and manipulation. But this one in particular is really interesting to take a look at and to consider and to look further in. How many more of these PR groups? This is just one. How many more are there out there? What else do they do? Is the sort of non-reaction to the so-called grooming gangs in Northern England, is there a PR group somewhere which is managing the reaction to that? I don't know. I don't know how this deep this stuff goes, but I suppose we'll have to get into it another time. I just wish I had more time to do it. Anyway, this is a very interesting article, folks. So, thank you very much for listening, and catch you next time.